It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy. The day after Christmas, and all through the house, no one did anything because we're here doing a podcast. Jesse Granger, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great.
Yeah? You were telling me about your dad, and you know, he's a big poker fan, right?
Yeah, my dad, man, he plays poker online. He goes to the casinos and plays. He watches it on TV. Huge poker fan.
So, like, when you told him about our guest this week, did he tell you he was proud of you?
No. No, I'm sure he's proud of me.
Oh, man. Well, you know, when you tweet this out, you got to say, hey, Pops, give me the love.
Absolutely.
All right. So our guest today is none other than Vegas Golden Knights superfan and poker aficionado, Daniel Negreanu. Daniel, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. I'm an avid listener to the show, and I think you do a great job at, you know, what you do and cluing people in what's happening in Vegas and across the league.
Thank you. We really appreciate that. We're really glad to have you on today. So, obviously, Christmas was just around the corner. How was your day? How was it? Good, bad, great, fantastic? What was it?
Oh, it was good. Did the whole, you know, traditional old school family thing that I haven't done in several years. So it was kind of it was fun spending 2 to 3 hours opening presents, and there was a lot of Golden Knights gear that was handed out in different directions.
Now, was it you handing it out with Tomáš Nosek's name and number on most of the jerseys, or were you receiving a lot of Golden Knights gifts?
Well, it is true that I am officially the number one and likely only, you know, member of the Tomáš Nosek fan club. But no, I wasn't handing out Nosek jerseys quite yet. But I might be the only one in the arena that has one. Actually, it's very, very likely that other than his family and himself, I'm the only one in the world that has a Nosek jersey.
I don't even know if Noshik's family has his jersey out. They probably have like James Neal jerseys or Fleury, right?
Maybe they have his Grand Rapid Griffins jersey from back in the day.
There you go. No, yeah. but I saw all over Twitter people posting their kids with Golden Knights stuff on. It was really cool. This is kind of the first Christmas that since they're a team, and it was cool seeing like a new generation of hockey fans being born here in Vegas. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. I think I saw a video of a kid outside shooting a ball into a net and wearing a James Neal jersey, and his dad commented like he has not left that little cul-de-sac shooting since he got his jersey, which is really awesome. And that's what obviously we all knew would happen once hockey came here, because that's just what hockey does. Now, Daniel, just really quick, I want to talk to you because we're coming up on a game that I think is going to be very near and dear to your heart. As your team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, come to town for the first time to face, well, your adopted team, the Vegas Golden Knights. How in the hell are you going to get through that game?
Well, to be honest with you, what's happening here in Las Vegas is so epic, and we have a chance to make history. So a lot of people ask, like, who will I be rooting for? The Leafs are going to be just fine where they're at. They're going to be making the playoffs. You know, as for Vegas, we have a chance to, like, really make history. So I'll be wearing the Knights jersey and the Leafs hat, and I'll be rooting for overtime so everyone locks up a point. And, you know, the great thing about having a team on each side of, you know, on one in each conference is the only time you really have to worry about them facing off in a meaningful game is in the Stanley Cup final. And that's a problem that I'm willing to struggle with. But at this point, the Las Vegas Knights, I mean, I go to every home game. It's just, they've just become, you know, just my priority. I spend most of my time and energy watching those games.
Yeah, so a lot of people, I mean, it's almost every fan of the Golden Knights is going through this struggle. I mean, there are people that have started watching hockey brand new, but most people had a team before. And I've seen everything from people that will wear Golden Knights jerseys except for when their team comes to town, and then they'll still wear their old team. And then there's people that absolutely despise their old team. Like, we got a buddy that's a Capitals fan that they've just disappointed him so many times over and over and over that he wanted them to beat the Capitals more than any team in the league. You're still a Maple Leafs fan, right, Daniel?
Oh, no. To add to your point, I saw some really unique ideas where I saw someone have a Fleury jersey that was half a Pittsburgh Penguins jersey and half a Golden Knights jersey. And they sort of sewed it up and made it all one, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, no, I'm certainly rooting for the Leafs. They're an exciting young team after their rebuild that they had to go through and got rid of some pieces that, you know, they just, you know, didn't need to have on the team. One of them being my buddy, Phil Kessel. But they've done a really good job of a rebuild, and they're an exciting team to watch. And seeing a game between those two teams, I think it'd just be some great hockey, because Toronto definitely likes to play an up-tempo pace. Mike Babcock, their coach, doesn't want them to. Like, he says, you know, like, he'll go on the road and lose a game 2-1, and he says, we played great. You know, they win a game 7-4, and he's like, we won, and it was pretty to look at, but that was dumb. It was stupid hockey. You know?
That's a really good Mike Babcock impression, to be honest. Now, in kind of along those lines, do you feel like he's kind of sucked a little bit of the creativity and the offensive firepower out of this team because he is looking to slow the game down, win games 2-1, 1-0? Now, I get that that's how you win in the playoffs, but you don't really want to stunt the creativity of William Nylander, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and I feel like that's kind of happening in Toronto.
Well, they go through ebb and flow. Like, they started to really play well. Obviously, they had Austin Matthews out for about 6 games. He just returned to play against the Rangers and looked better after some concussion-like symptoms. But, you know, that's the struggle he has to deal with, is the fact that you do have a very freewheeling style team that can score a lot of goals. But as you said already, you know, in the playoffs, is that really how you're going to win games? You think you're going to beat teams 8-5 in the playoffs? They have to be better defensively. And the big problem with this team, and this is one where I was going to discuss it with him in terms of this team has got problems, and mm-hmm. the problems are on the back end. You know, right now you look at a top pair of, like, Morgan Riley and Ron Hainsey, and, you know, you got Jake Gardner playing with Connor Carrick, and, you know, Zaitsev is out there, Borgman and Pollock, they don't scare you, you know? So there's definitely a lack of depth on defense. That's why I was so surprised to see them bring in a guy like Patrick Marleau, who's obviously a great veteran presence to the team. But I thought to myself, you know, if you were going to spend some money in free agency on a guy who's 38 years old, you know, maybe you want to spend it on, like, somebody on the defensive end rather than another forward, because they're pretty deep at forward.
How exciting has this season been for you? I mean, as a Maple Leafs fan, solely a Maple Leafs fan for the longest, they've had a rough stretch lately. And obviously you were still a fan, but there wasn't much winning. You didn't have many nights where you ended up on the winning end. And now you've got the Maple Leafs, who are one of the most exciting up-and-coming teams in the league, and obviously the Golden Knights, who are the story of the season. Mm-hmm. Now it's just nothing but winning for Mr. Daniel Negreanu, right?
No question. But, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, you hit the nail on the head with the Toronto thing. For years and years and years, my biggest frustration with that team, and it all started with me when they traded Tuukka Rask away for nothing, for Andrew Raycroft, which was like, what? What just happened there? But what really upsets me about the team, or what did for so many years, is their inability to build through the draft and really commit to a long-term type of dynasty situation. They were always in the mediocre sphere. They were, you know, making trades. Like, even like Phil Kessel, when they traded for him, they gave up 2 firsts and a second-round pick. And this is a team that needed to build. And you bring in, you know, a guy like Phil, who's obviously a dynamic scorer, but how are you going to win that way? And I'm so excited to see what Brendan Shanahan has done since taking over, in that he stripped the team to shreds. Like, he got rid of everything. He was very creative in getting rid of the David Clarkson contract. You know, he moved Kessel. Then he got Dion Phaneuf out of there. Like, some long-term contracts that really hampered the team's development going forward. So he stripped it to shreds. And then last year we saw 6 Toronto rookies in the top 10 in scoring, I believe, for rookies. And if you add it up, Toronto's rookie scoring, right, compared to the second, third, and fourth best teams in the league, they outscored them all combined. So it's really great to see. And that just shows you the changing NHL. You look at the New Jersey Devils, mm-hmm. a young team who was terrible last year, and all of a sudden they're good. You look at the Vegas Golden Knights, but we didn't exist last year, and all of a sudden you can put a team together. So the rebuilding phase is so much faster, and I think Brendan Shanahan did a good job with it. The only questionable, you know, move, I think, as I said, was bringing in Patrick Marleau, who seems to be fitting in well. I just think that in the playoffs, they're going to look at that depth on defense, and what happens if Gardner or Riley go down? I mean, who's going to fill that hole? There is nobody.
Do you think they make a trade at the deadline to try to bring in somebody on the back end that can make them better?
Well, I think they may. You know, James Van Riemsdyk's the guy who gets, JVR is the one who gets rumored to be traded a lot. Mm-hmm. Right now he's playing, you know, he's playing quite well, but he's playing on a line with Mitch Marner, essentially on their, you know, quote-unquote third line, if that's a thing. But, you know, he's an unrestricted free agent, I believe, at the end of the year, so there's talk about moving him to bring in a defenseman. If I were, you know, a GM for Toronto, I wouldn't have made the Marleau deal, but I would certainly be actively looking for someone on the back end to, you know, just deal with the rigors of a season, and understanding that, you know, you can't depend on just 2-3 guys on the back end to play 35 minutes. You got to, like, have some depth, because the playoffs is no joke. You're playing a game every other night. Injuries happen, and You know, I just think they're very thin on the back end, and you know that's something that when we see on New Year's, I think you'll notice and you'll see that's something we can exploit, especially with our transition game.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things that you mentioned is building through the draft and the inability of the Toronto Maple Leafs to do that for a long time. Obviously, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, we know those names, but one of the names that's a homegrown talent that kind of gets lost in the mix is Nazem Kadri. And I love the way that he plays. And it just seems like since Mike Babcock got there and gave him a role, a clearly defined role, he has just simply flourished in that. Now, I love the way that the guy plays, and I think that he's a very unheralded piece as to why this team is good now.
You're absolutely right, because I'll tell you what, Kadri's first 4 years in Toronto, he just looked like, for the most part, a bust. He was a seventh overall pick and looked like he'd be kind of a mediocre guy, just couldn't put it together. Once he was given, and he had a sort of a nasty edge to him, mm-hmm. You know, he's got a temper problem or whatever, but reining that in a little bit and still playing that kind of aggressive style, and he's got the shutdown role, mm-hmm. but he also has a shutdown role, is getting some power play time, and he is for sure the unsung hero on the team at the forward position, because he's doing all the little things and playing an aggressive style and being a leader in the dressing room. I mean, I've had a chance to meet him and a few of the buddies there, and he seems to be a guy that they rally around.
All this talk about building through the draft, and obviously the Golden Knights are doing way better than anyone expected them to do right off the bat. But man, it's exciting seeing how much potential they've got in and future assets. I was just watching some of the juniors championships that just started, and Erik Brännström looks amazing. He already scored a goal for Sweden. We saw him at the development camp. I don't know how much you saw of him during then. He wasn't here for preseason and stuff. But and then you got Cody Glass, who I talked to last week, doing amazing, leading the entire WHL in scoring. Then you got Suzuki, who's leading his league in scoring. They've got guys like Nick Hag, Lecision. This team has so, plus they've got 10 extra mm-hmm. picks in the next 3 years.
Yep.
10 extra draft picks other than theirs in the next. Just how exciting is it knowing that the Golden Knights, despite all the stuff that they're doing this year, but just the future for this team, they could be the next, like what Winnipeg is doing with all their draft picks coming around.
Let's talk Brännström first, because I absolutely love this player. I watched him in the summer series over the summer and thought he outshined Rasmus Dahlin, Timothy Liljegren. He played like next level. I mean, he looked like a little, smaller version of Erik Karlsson out there. And as far as Cody Glass, Nick Suzuki, Jake Lecision, as you mentioned, this team has done a great job of not only putting a product on the ice where we're actually leading the conference, but we also have a farm system already that ranks somewhere in the middle of the league. Not to mention, as you said, all the picks we've already accumulated. So a lot of people ask me, they say, well, isn't this going to hurt their development, the fact that they're so good right now? And I said, normally that would be the case. But McPhee did such a great job of already stockpiling three first-round picks that we got last year, and then additional picks in the coming season. So we're already set up where we may actually just fade, or I mean, it seems like we already have just kind of faded this idea of a rebuild phase. We just start out already as, can you imagine how many teams in the league in any facet would rather be us right now? Like, would rather have a farm system that looks like ours, would rather have a team on the ice that looks like ours. We've the league was very generous to us in the rules that they set up, and I think McPhee did a good job of really sort of snagging a lot of value for some guys that maybe he shouldn't have been able to get that kind of value and pick up some first-round picks. So it's really exciting, and I'm super excited to see what develops when you bring in this young infusion of talent over the coming years.
Yeah, George McPhee's situation, I mean, he's definitely the envy of the other 30 GMs, hands down. And I think to add to all the things you just said is he's got no bad contracts. I mean, he took on Clarkson and Grabowski just to get first-round picks, but those mm-hmm. are going to go off the books before any of these other guys need to be signed to long-term deals. And he's just, there's literally no flaw right now as far as there's no bad contracts. He's got draft picks for days in the coming drafts. And like you said, three first-round picks, but Nick Hag had a first-round grade on him before he mm-hmm. dropped to second round. And Jake Lecision, before he injured his knee, would have been a first-round pick. So just to think, this team may have five first-round talents just sitting there waiting to come up, plus they've got two second-round picks in basically every draft for all of eternity. Mm-hmm. And the trade deadline coming up, you never know. They could end up with another first-round pick. It's just insane the way McPhee has, like you said, put a good team on the ice, but not sacrifice the long-term.
Oh, you touched on something super important for this team, which is the most exciting thing about it for me, is the fact that we're not sucked into any long-term contracts. We're not saddled by any of that. Having said that, so then a lot of people wonder, like, well, aren't these guys all going to leave? Why would they? I think Las Vegas is an attractive city for a lot of these guys to decide to re-sign with, and they may do it for slightly less because of the fact that there's no state tax here in Nevada. So, you can pay slightly less for a guy here than, Winnipeg or Edmonton or something along those lines, and it's just a much more attractive place to play, especially because the organization has gotten off to such a great foot where people are not going to think, well, I don't want to stay in a place where we can't win. We can win. We are winning. And, the culture of hockey, you look at opposing coaches and players and they come to this arena, they're blown away. They're like, wow, they didn't expect the electricity that we bring in terms of the fan base and, just the energy and the style of play. It's like, it's fun to play. I mean, what kind of hockey player doesn't want to play such an up-tempo transition game? It's like playing pond hockey a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And what player doesn't want to play for Gerard Gallant, really? I mean, let's just say he is one of those ultimate players coaches where you realize he's going to get the best out of you, and you have fun when you come to the rink. And all the guys say it in the locker room, after games, after practices. They all love playing for Gerard Gallant, and this team is an extension of his personality. It's an extension of how he lives his life, how he played the game when he was with the Red Wings. And that's something that shouldn't go overlooked either. I mean, this team is the perfect manifestation of what Bill Foley wanted, George McPhee wanted, and Gerard Gallant can coach.
Absolutely. You really, I can't stress enough how perfect of a coach Gallant was for this specific team. Now think about, who is this team? This is the makeup of this team is a bunch of guys who are in a situation where their owners and management said, we don't want you. I mean, that's essentially how they can take it. We can't keep you. We don't want you. So they're already coming in with somewhat bruised egos, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. The last thing you want is some kind of John Tortorella-like coach who's going to yell and scream at them. You want to build them up. And I love the fact that if you listen to, Gallant in post-game, exit interviews, he doesn't throw his players under the bus ever. Mm-hmm. If Nate Schmidt makes a mistake here or there, he gives it the old, well, I like the aggressive play. Sometimes we're going to make mistakes, but we're going to work on that. He never throws his players under the bus. And I think players appreciate that. And it's one of the reasons why the whole team is bought in. They like him, they like each other, and we've created a kumbaya-like situation in Vegas where there was no expectation. It'll be interesting to see how the stress of the stretch run changes that, because pressure is going to start mounting at this point. No longer is this team a thing that, like, oh man, wouldn't it be crazy if we made the playoffs? If we don't make the playoffs now, it'll be seen as a travesty, like a total catastrophe.
Yeah, I actually was tweeting out some stats the other day about teams that are leading their conference on Christmas Day. So since 1967, when they expanded from the original six, so creating two, you didn't have two conferences before that, so you couldn't track the stats. So
right.
Creating the two conferences in 1967, there have been 96 teams leading their conference on Christmas Day. 96 of them have made the playoffs. And the average seed of those teams in the playoffs mm-hmm. is 1.8.
That's really good. So for those of you listening, you all know how much Jesse Granger loves to jinx goaltenders when they have shutouts. You know how much he likes to jinx pitchers when they're throwing no hitters and shutouts and all that. So this is not, I'm going to say this is not Jesse Granger jinxing the Golden Knights, because if you listen to last week's episode, you know that he was wrong. You know that he's come around and he understands his team is good. So, Jesse Granger, please tell us right now that this is not a jinx that you're trying to throw on the Golden Knights.
Absolutely not. I'm saying it's mathematically impossible for them to miss the playoffs, is what I'm saying. Basically.
We need to get Shang Pang on to just verify the math on this. But yeah, I think you're right. And this goes back to what Daniel was saying. Obviously, at some point this season, there's going to be a flip in expectations. And I'm waiting on when I can ask Gerard Gallant this question. Because at some point, right, this team is going to go, they're going to lose two or three games, and they're going to fall down in the standings a little bit. And then, whereas in the beginning of the season, if that happens, it's okay. You turn the page, you go back to work, you try to play your style of hockey. But now, if you go from first to on the wild card, or in a wild card spot, or on the bubble, or anything like that, there's a completely different connotation to all of that. So at what point, and what does Gerard Gallant need to do in order to make sure that those expectations don't start to creep in, and that these players that are playing out of their minds, that are playing up to their potential for probably the first time in their career, What does he have to do to make sure they don't revert back to the players that they were?
Well, I think this road trip is you can already feel mm-hmm. it changing. I'm super pumped to go to Cali for this road trip. And
I'm jealous.
Yeah. The Anaheim game, not as much, just because they're just so banged up and they're just not playing well.
Perry's not playing in the game, correct?
Yeah, I don't think so. It doesn't look like
Getzlaff is back.
Yeah.
But it 1-2 punch there is non-existent. Ryan Kessler's still not back. So
yeah, that one. But man, this LA game, who would have thought less than 40 games into this franchise, you'd have a game like this for first place is on the line. Huge game. This is no longer, let's see if we can go on the road and win one. It'll piss the Kings off if we beat them type of thing. Like that's what I thought. Yeah. Like if you would have asked me before the season, what is this road trip going to be? It's going to be, can we piss off the Ducks and Kings by annoying them? Now this is a battle for the Pacific Division already.
And what's great about it is the Golden Knights style of play, because like you said, they're going to go out there and piss off the Kings. They're like gnats. They're just so relentless that the Kings are not going to be able to keep up. And believe me, this is coming from a guy that's watched plenty of Los Angeles Kings hockey. Now, they're getting better, and they're moving more toward a transition game style, but they're not where the Golden Knights are.
I will say, though, I would add that the game that we had here against the Kings was the most physical game mm-hmm. that we played. You know, typically this isn't a team that likes to get into, you know, fisticuffs, but L.A. sort of forced that, and you sense the sense of rivalry. And I think it's going to be exciting, you know, to echo your point, that this game coming up will have sort of a playoff-like atmosphere in that it's a big, meaningful game that nobody expected when you still looked at it on the calendar and thought, oh, wow, can't wait for this one. I would have expected, you know, us to be virtually out of it by now.
Unfortunately, it's not happening on a Wednesday because it's on NBCSN, and they could have put it on their Wednesday night rivalry game, but they didn't do that because it's on a Thursday.
Yeah, but the whole rivalry thing, it's inevitable. This is going to be a rivalry. There's no way you can stop. It's going to. Listen, the Golden Knights are going to make the playoffs.
Yes.
At this point, okay, like I said, the average seeding, 1.8. Mm-hmm. That tells me there's a pretty damn good chance they're going to have a home playoff series.
Fantastic.
Is someone going to beat this team in T-Mobile Arena during a playoff game? Can they? Yes. Would I say the chances are good? No.
Now, okay, and this is something that I want to bring up, right? I think it depends on who they're going to be playing in the first round.
Of course.
Like, if it's, okay, so say it's the Los Angeles Kings, and the Kings have their fans, and they travel well, and that building is divided, and it is just absolutely buzzing. I think that atmosphere gets the Golden Knights even more riled up. Like, I think the more opposing team fans that come into this building, the better this team plays in order to just shut them up. So I feel like, you know, if it's a nasty, really, really hectic crowd, I don't think that there's a possibility anybody beats this team at home.
Well, I don't know about that. Here's what I think is going to be the most important factor in terms of a seven-game series. It comes down to coaching and coaching adjustments. You heard Alex Tuch, when they played Washington, talk about the adjustments they made to what Washington likes to do, which is bring it up the ice. That first goal they scored against Washington was because they had sticks up in the middle, and they were planning for that. They were really and when you think about the style of play that Vegas plays, there are adjustments that can be made. When we saw Dallas, you know, win 3-0 here in Vegas, they played a different brand of hockey. They were much more careful on the back end. We're not that great when we set up in the zone. We're good in transition. So if you kept the third man back and played a much more boring Ottawa style, you know, after realizing that, you know, the other way isn't working so well, that could pose big problems over a seven-game series when you get to see it every night and go, okay, guys, this is how we beat this team.
I completely agree with you. When Dallas did that, I talked to Hitchcock after the game, and my story was basically, this is the blueprint. Just do whatever you can. Play prevent defense. Do not let them beat you in transition, and once, like you said, once they get into the zone, they're not that dangerous. But I will say, since that point, they have been improving significantly on when they have sustained zone time, their scoring chances that they produce, especially that top line of Marchessault, Carlson, and Smith. You saw it with Carlson's goal against the Capitals, where that was a sustained zone pressure, and mm-hmm. then you get it over, Riley Smith gets it over to Marchessault, who feeds it to Carlson for the one-timer. I think teams have countered what they do, and now the Golden Knights are now countering that.
Yeah, well, they're finding different facets to their game that they can implement, and they can make them a deeper team. And you're right, you're absolutely right. We talked about Alex Tuch, and we talked about where can we put him in this lineup in order to get more of a cycle game going down low. And who would have thought that it would actually start to come from Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson. And it has. It has for the last couple of games at least. And you're right, coaching adjustments. Gerard Gallant knows what he's doing to get the best, to get the most out of these players.
Yeah, I think another key is how many times does the fourth line keep that other team hemmed in their own zone? Like it seems like every time the Golden Knights are kind of hitting a lull, they're not getting anything. You put that fourth line in there, they forecheck the crap out of the other team, and they just keep them hemmed in. And I know Daniel loves that, watching Noshik do that, right?
I love, and Gallant, you know, he recognized them for what they are. And he says, they play simple hockey, north-south. They, you know, pin their opponents in. They might not score a ton of goals. You don't see big stats from that line. But what you see is, you know, they eat up a lot of time, and you're not concerned when you throw that line out. We have four lines, and over a playoff series, that plays a big role, especially if, you know, for example, we were to win in the first round, make it to the second. The fact that we don't have to depend on our defensemen playing 30 minutes or 35 minutes and forwards playing 22, 23 minutes, we roll all these lines out pretty close to equally. Like, that fourth line plays 12, 13 minutes a game. That's a luxury. Well, I mean, I can't think of other teams that have that luxury, that put that much faith in a fourth line, and that helps us tremendously to stay rested. And we need that rest because of the way we play, that up-tempo, quick style. We get a turnover, there's no, where do we go with it? Let's see. They instantly move it up ice. And, you know, when Stamkos came to town, he even said, there's a lot we can learn from that in terms of not holding onto the puck too long. And that's what Vegas does. We always look to turn it up ice and look for, you know, odd man rushes.
Yeah, I was actually the one that was asking that question to Stamkos. And when he said that, I feel like that was one of the, like, light bulb moments for me. I'm like, Steven Stamkos
just said that we can
one of the best players in the entire NHL, on the best team in the entire NHL, that plays a transition game, just said, maybe we can take a page out of the Golden Knights book. And I'm just sitting there in the locker room like, did he really just say that?
Yes, he did. He did. He said a lot of things in that post-game press conference, but, you know, he did say that. And I think you get these teams that come in here, and there's still that expansion label put on this team. And I don't think, I'm not suggesting it's Vegas flu. I'm not suggesting anything other than that.
I am suggesting
you
that.
Are, of course you are. But there's this label. And I think that teams around the league still kind of have this idea that the Golden Knights are, you know, the expansion team, the new kids on the block or whatever. And they just aren't prepared. I mean, what did Barry Trotz say after the game? We didn't come ready to play in the first 20 minutes of the game, and before you knew it, we were out of the game.
Could that be because they had a back-to-back? They played in Arizona. They flew here, got here late, and still went out and hung out.
Okay.
Very likely and very possible.
I'd like to get Daniel's thoughts on this, because he's a Vegas local. Daniel spends time in the casinos more than the average person.
Did you see any Capitals out? That's what we want
to
know.
Well, I don't know if I want you, like, spying, but I just mean, like, you, I feel, and, like, you're friends with Kessel, like, you're friends with how legit do you think that is, that these guys, I'm not saying, like I said on the podcast before, they're not crowd surfing at Hakkasan, but they're staying out later. What do you think?
So let's look at two specific teams that came to town 3 days early. One was the Winnipeg Jets. The other was the Chicago Blackhawks. So they came in a few days early, had plenty of time. Both of them looked awful. Chicago didn't even look like they showed up. You know, Winnipeg looked sluggish, and they didn't play the same style that they normally play, and they were a team that was really reeling at the time. I know for a fact, and I'm not going to mention my sources, some of those Blackhawks were out till 7 or 8 in the morning at some establishments in Las Vegas, and beverages were consumed. So the Vegas flu is a real thing to some players. I think eventually, you know, it was Miami maybe before, you know, people doing that in Florida. But, you know, even in Vegas, if people aren't intending to just go out and blaze, they're going to go to one of these fine restaurants. They're going to have some wine, you know, and the craps are right there. They're staying right on the strip. You know, they're at Bellagio. They're right in the heat of it. So what do you tell these guys at 10 p.m.? We go upstairs and watch a movie? They're these young guys who are in Las Vegas to play a hockey game. And for as much as they think, you know, that they're invincible, because a lot of these guys, when they play, they think they're invincible. They can do anything. You don't realize how much of an effect that, you know, staying up a little later, not being focused and distracted, affects specifically the first period. How many teams have we seen come to Vegas and in the first 10 minutes look like, oh boy, whew, you know, like it's almost like they got the hangover they're getting rid of.
Yeah, and I've seen other players and other coaches and stuff say that they plan their rookie dinners and just stuff like that, like something that simple. Every team does it, but they all specifically wait until Las Vegas, because why not? It's going to be way more fun. We can do it that. And these guys see this as one out of 82. Now, the Kings, by the time they come here for the fourth time or whatever, like it's going to be a little different. They're not going to be out here partying. But I think especially these East Coast teams that only come here once, they see that as, look, we're going on 41 road games. They're going to suck. Traveling sucks. Let's make this one not suck.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I do. I want to believe in an NHL in which the players are always professional so that when they get on the ice, you know it's the best of that particular team versus the best of this particular team, and the team that goes out there and plays better wins. I don't want to see what Vegas is doing be discredited in any way because of, quote, the Vegas flu.
This team,
I don't think that'll happen. I really don't. I mean, for the naysayers who say it's just because of that, that's absurd. You look at the way we play on the road. Even when we went through that East Coast trip where, you know, we went 1-3-1, we still, you know, played a good played like a full effort in each game. We're in each game. I honestly think that this team, much like, you know, everyone looks to the previous Stanley Cup champion and says, well, what did they do right? And let's figure out how we can copy that. I think this will be a model for struggling teams that maybe don't have high-end talent. Because, like, how can they compete in these games? Part of how you can do that is what's a high-variance style. High-variance style is that up-tempo, quick transition game where you get more ad man rushes. What we've compensated for our weaknesses, which was, you know, before the season started, we said, well, who's going to score on this team? Right? We haven't had that problem. We haven't had that problem because we've given these players an opportunity with the style of play to score a lot of goals. I think if we didn't do that, we might be, you know, one of the lowest scoring teams in the league without that playing style.
I completely agree. And I don't want it to sound like I'm like, just like if this was the Atlanta Thrashers, that roster, these teams could come in still drunk and win against it. Like it's clear that this team is really good. I mean, it's not just the Vegas flu, but I think it definitely helps. And to Daniel's point, the style that this team plays, and not only the style that this team plays could be copied, but I think teams that don't have a Austin Matthews, a Connor McDavid, a superstar, can copy the Golden Knights. And maybe instead of trying to get those stars in our first and second lines, why don't we spread the wealth a little bit and just beef up with B-minus players on our third and fourth lines and look what it's doing for Vegas. Like Daniel said, all the guys are fresh. They all play equal time. Gerard Gallant says it all the time. I like to keep them in the game. They stay in the game if they're not sitting on the bench for too long. That way when they do come in, they're effective. I think this could be a model going forward for teams that can't get that generational talent.
No question. Like you think about, you know, the movie Moneyball and the Moneyball movement, if you will. This team represents that in hockey right now. And then you look at the contrast. You look at a team like the Edmonton Oilers, who just made two huge signings. Obviously, Connor McDavid earns every penny that he gets. Then you got Dreisaitl, who's also getting a big paycheck. So you spend a big chunk of your cap on two players. The problem is the surrounding cast, they can't keep up with them. They're not fast enough. So that team's been struggling. They've obviously been better of late. But overall, that model, you know, hasn't really worked for them to spend big on the couple players. And I think more teams are going to start to look at guys like that, you know, are undervalued, underappreciated, and underpaid, and think, okay, why don't we just get a team of those guys, put them in a system that helps them thrive, and then we can avoid, you know, spending at the top of the cap. We can just, you know, copy the Knights' system that they've employed.
No, I completely agree. I think that more teams around the league should look at the Golden Knights and say, why can't we replicate this? Like, why can't we replicate this on the third and the fourth line? Why can't we figure out a way to not lose those battles every single game and be so reliant upon our top-end talent, our first and second lines? Because there's a lot of teams in this league where if you don't get a goal from your top two lines, you don't win the game. And the Golden Knights are in that situation where every night it's somebody different. You know, there's obviously a couple of leaders in the Marchessaults and the Smiths and the James Neals and those guys that can put the puck in the net, and they do it pretty regularly. But when those guys aren't going, it's the unsung heroes. It's the third and the fourth line. It's some of the guys on defense that you don't expect to chip in, like Derek Englund or Braden McNabb. And that's what this team is built on. And it's a fantastic thing to watch. It really is, because if more teams emulate this, I think overall the brand of hockey that's played is going to be significantly more fun than watching a couple of really high-end guys and then play. And then for the entire game, a bunch of people that can't skate, that don't play an up-tempo type of game, and they just try to hack and hold and do all that stuff. The faster the game, the more transition game that we can get in this league, the better.
And you know, the other additional point to that is you're much tougher to play against.
Mm-hmm.
You can't lock in and look at one line, let's shut them down. You look at Pittsburgh. When Kessel first moved to Pittsburgh, sort of the experiment or the idea was, let's put, you know, Kessel on Crosby's line and then put Malkin up there a bunch. And then all of a sudden, you know, you just try to shut that one line down, and then you're golden, you're free. Pittsburgh started to see success when they have Crosby on the first line, Malkin on the second, and Kessel was playing on the third line.
Mm-hmm.
So he was getting a lot of freed up time. Right now, our third line with, you know, Leipzig and Tuck and it just, they're freed up to play. They're not being keyed on. They're not being looked at. So they have better opportunities to score. So that's tough to fade. You know, how do you put your best defensive players out against all four lines?
You can't do it. And that's the key. Now, you mentioned Phil Kessel. All right, and so there was a lot of talk surrounding the Pittsburgh game as one of those marquee matchups, and there was a lot of talk about Marc-Andre Fleury and Sidney Crosby and whether or not they were going to chirp. I do know that you're friends with Phil Kessel. Was there any chirping going on between the two of you after the Golden Knights beat the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Absolutely. I was in Europe, and I watched it at 4 a.m., and I texted him right away, and I said, I told you they were good.
What did he say?
He said, I told you they were good. Right? Because he told me before the season they're going to be pretty good. He's very high on James Neal.
Yeah.
He had nothing but like high praise for Fleury. He said Fleury's an amazing goalie and he's like an even better person. He did say this, and I'll share this because I don't think it's too much to divulge. He doesn't think they have enough high-end talent to win in the playoffs, you know, when you need to, you know, have those top-end guys. Because Pittsburgh, right now, if you look at where they're at, they're just kind of like, you know, trying to get through the regular season so they can even get to the playoffs. And once they do, they have that high-end, world-class talent. So he didn't feel like that was there, you know, across the board. But, you know, he definitely thinks they're good and they're tough to play against. And he thinks Fleury is world-class.
I agree somewhat. I think once you get into a seven-game series and a team can really focus on you, watch film on just your team, they don't have time to do that in an 82-game season. And not only that, but we've talked about how hard the Golden Knights play and how they can run four lines at you. Well, Crosby and these guys on the top lines may not be going as hard as they can because it's an 82-game season, but once it gets to the playoffs, that's over with. The energy level is going to be matched by the opponent when it comes to the playoffs.
Oh, you're right. Let's be honest. Like, the Golden Knights are playing for their life every night. This is their playoffs every night, right? You look at a team like Pittsburgh. They just won two cups. They've played an extra season, right? They're not going 100% in the regular season right now. It's part of the reason I made a wager at the beginning of the season. I bet Columbus to win that division at 5.5-1. They felt like Washington regressed. And Pittsburgh knows at this point that you don't have to win the President's Cup to win the Stanley Cup. And it's a different brand of hockey. The most important thing is be fresh, you know, be healthy. And when you have some of the best players in the world, as they do, you can get on a run and win the cup.
Absolutely. They're the San Antonio Spurs. They're trying to employ that strategy, but in hockey.
Yeah, I still think that they need to figure out how to get something more out of their third and fourth lines, which I think will come at the trade deadline.
And I also think a huge issue for them, which we've talked all this stuff about Golden Knights and we haven't even mentioned these two guys, but Pittsburgh's goaltending situation is not ideal. Matt Murray's not playing nearly as well as they thought he would. The backup situation has been a train wreck from Niemi. They cut him to now Jerry's playing and he's playing a little better, but I mean, it's not ideal. And then you look at the Golden Knights goaltending situation. We haven't even talked about it. They've got one of the best goaltending situations in the entire league. With Marc-Andre Fleury coming back, he's 100% healthy. He looked great against Pittsburgh. He's looked good before he got hurt. He looked good after he got hurt. He's great. And then you've got Malcolm Subban, who you're going to try to get in there as many games as you can to get experience, and you hope he's the potential franchise goalie. I mean, that's one thing. And we talk about playoffs. Goaltending can absolutely win you games in the playoffs. And I have no doubt, like, when you're going into a playoff game with Marc-Andre Fleury back there, there's a chance he's going to steal that game for you.
Yeah, he has that capability, absolutely. And I think the greatest thing about this team, too, is there's this healthy competition at every single position.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went into this season, we didn't know that was going to be a thing at goalie. We really didn't, because George McPhee said flat out, we're not even sure if Malcolm Subban can play at the NHL level. And all Malcolm Subban's done is live up to the expectation that he has of himself, that Dave Pryor has for him, and he's turned himself into an NHL-caliber goalie over these last couple of months. So if Marc-Andre Fleury falters in the playoffs, and this is obviously way down the road, but if he does, there's going to be no hesitation on this team to go to Malcolm Subban. There's going to be no difference in how the players in front of him play. There really isn't, because they know that Malcolm Subban is going to go in there and do his job. And that's up and down the lineup. We're talking about the fourth line. William Carrier hasn't played in weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And you could make the argument that when William Carrier was in the lineup and on that fourth line with Belmare and Nosek, they were faster than they are right now. So there's all this competition at every single position. And it just breeds the best possible product that you can put on the ice every single game.
You know, and there's another part of that, you know, not just defense. You were talking a little bit about Pittsburgh and you know what they're facing with Murray and their backup goaltending situation, and that's a whole. But more importantly, I think, as well, is defense. And one of the things, we have so much depth at forward, as you mentioned, with Carrier out, Lindberg steps in, no problem. But even on defense, you know, you lose a Spezza, who's been playing really well. You plug in John Merrill. You throw in Brad Hunt. And we have the depth to fade what is inevitable with injuries, because when you really look at this team across the board, we've been really lucky with injuries outside of goaltending. You know, in terms of defense, and we haven't lost many man games, especially compared to other teams. But even if we did, we have as many NHL-ready, if not more, players, you know, in the box or in the minor leagues right now that can jump right in, and we don't lose a step. Like Merrill, I thought, has done a pretty good job of, you know, after not playing one out of 13 games, stepping in and not looking out of place.
Absolutely. You've got Merrill and Hunt, who usually sit up in the press box with me, and they've come in. They can, and Hunt played well when he was there, and he goes in. And remember, you still have Jason Garrison down in Chicago. You have Reinhardt, who has yet to play, but he's down in Chicago. And then at the forwards, you've got Hika, Polkinen. Like, this team is super deep.
And one other thing to your point about Brad Hunt and John Merrill, they are two defensemen that play a very distinct style. So if you lose a puck-moving defenseman, you can put Brad Hunt in there. If you lose more of a stay-at-home guy, you can put John Merrill in there. Like, you have position players that you can put in to be in your lineup for whatever it is you need on a given night against a given opponent. And I think that's fantastic, too.
And Gallant has shown that he does the same-for-same swap. When he puts Shea Theodore in, he takes Brad Hunt out. He's not putting Shea Theodore in for a Spezza or a more stay-at-home defender. He likes to keep like the same-for-same switch.
Right, which allows that continuity from each defensive pair. It allows each guy to do what they do well and not overextend and try to do too many things. It's just the way that this team is set up. Obviously, we all had a lot of questions going into the season, but watching it play out has been nothing short of amazing. You're right. It's been the season. This is the story of the season. Now, where do they go from here? Like, where do the Golden Knights finish? Where do they end up? And what is this season going to come down to for them?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question that I would relate specifically to the trade deadline in terms of, you know, are we going to be buyers or sellers? Obviously, when the season started, everyone assumed that we're going to get rid of James Neal. We're going to just get rid of whatever we can and stock up because we weren't going to be in the hunt. The question is now, if we were buyers, what would we be actually looking to buy? And I don't think anything.
Like, I've got one idea.
I think it would be best to keep this team intact as is. And you sort of, we've kept out any sort of big ego type of guys who need to come in and play big minutes. This team seems to like be comfortable in the role that they're put in. There's nobody complaining about, you know, sitting or, you know, not getting enough ice time. And I wouldn't want to mess with that chemistry, because I think this is a team that's going to, you know, this is a destiny, if you will. And I think that it's most important to keep it together. So I think going forward, you're going to see this team, you know, lock up one of the top three spots in the Pacific and, you know, hopefully make some noise in the playoffs.
You don't want to mess up that chemistry, but what if it's for Erik Karlsson?
Okay, wait a minute. What do you have to give up, right? You don't get Erik Karlsson for free.
I mean, yeah. Well, okay. What do you give up for Erik Karlsson?
So that has been tossed around, and I don't see why the Golden Knights wouldn't be a team that could trade for him. You've got future capital to trade for him. That's what they're going to want. Now, the thing is, you've got the three first-round picks in Glass, Suzuki, and Brännström. I'd give up one. I wouldn't give up two of those three, and then you can throw in a couple first-round picks.
Would you give up Brännström for Karlsson right now?
Yes.
You would.
Are you kidding me? Brännström,
no, okay.
There's a 5% chance that one day Brännström may be as good as Erik Karlsson, and that's amazing. Well, that's amazing to have.
Sure,
but not if you could actually just have Erik Karlsson.
But think about when that deviation might be. Like, the Golden Knights might have a dynasty on their hands with these young guys coming in. You just talked about all five of them.
A dynasty, but Eric Carlson is Eric Carlson. It's you make that trade, in my opinion.
It's Eric Carlson with like 1 3/4 feet. Like he hasn't been as good, as dynamic as he is. You're talking about a guy that came off major surgery, hasn't looked that great. And let's be honest with you, like as much as it would be great to have Eric Carlson, I don't see that being a fit here.
I'll tell you what, I think it's like going a step too far and too early, right? You have to ask yourself, like, what is this team, where are we at right now? Are we really a Stanley Cup contender? I know the Lions just came out and they've got us at 8-1, which I think is kind of crazy. But are we really that close to winning the Cup right now? And if we are, maybe this makes sense. The problem is, again, what are you giving up? If we're not and we're actually building towards that, which is where I really see ourselves going, then bringing in a Carlson and giving up on a Brännström or a Cody Glass, something like that, that's a big mistake. You know, even if Carlson helps us this year, next year, whatnot, going forward, losing that youth movement or giving up on, because that's obviously what players want, what teams would want in return. And if not that, then they're going to want a Neil or a Marchessault or something along those lines. So, you know, it's not like we just get Carlson and don't have to sacrifice something. And I wouldn't want to sacrifice, even though he's my favorite defenseman in the league by 1,000%, I wouldn't want to sacrifice our future for him right now.
But then again, it is the Ottawa Senators that we're dealing with, so it's not like they are the smartest and most adept at making great trades for their franchise.
All right, let's package Lepsick and Hunt.
Yo, that's what I'm saying. Like right
done
there.
Deal.
Like if you're asking me, hey, we can get Eric Carlson for like, you know, a couple of guys on the third and fourth lines because Ottawa sees that it's working and it hasn't worked with Matt Duchene and they're trying to figure something out, then yeah, absolutely. I'll take Eric Carlson all day, but I don't want to give up the future.
Okay, but what if it's okay, so say they keep all three of the first rounders.
Okay.
The Glass, Suzuki, Brännström.
Sure.
They don't have to give those up.
Sure.
Say it's the next two first rounders
and
James Neal.
Oh, well. I mean, at that point, you've got to assess what James Neal means to this team right now. Like, you've. Man.
No, you do that trade.
I don't think we've had a problem on defense. I think we've been moving the puck really, really well with, like, you know, Colin Miller, Nate Schmidt, a wild man out there. Theodore's definitely on the young side. And, you know, he makes a lot of young, dumb mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, like, this team doesn't have trouble moving the puck. And we play a style that Eric Carlson, as you said, he might not necessarily, like, you know, fit in like a glove because of the way that he plays in Ottawa and the different, you know, form of hockey. And losing Neal could be more detrimental than gaining Carlson in terms of team chemistry and just the way that we play the game.
Yeah, the only thing that I think I would really love to see about that is Eric Carlson getting to play pond hockey. Because he doesn't get to play that at all in Ottawa. I mean, Guy Boucher has him in a very, very defensively minded, defensive-oriented system in which he doesn't really allow him to rove as much as he had prior to that. So that'd be interesting to see, but yeah.
Look at what Colin Miller has done in this system that Gerard Gallant lets him be free.
Yeah.
Now, Eric Carlson's hair has more talent than Colin Miller. And I love Colin Miller. I love Colin Miller. One of my favorite guys on the team. He's nowhere. He's not even the same stratosphere as Eric Carlson. You put him right there in that exact same spot. Are you kidding me?
No, I think it would make them better, but would bringing in Eric Carlson and giving up James Neal make this team that much better to
yes.
the point where they would where they could legitimately win the Stanley Cup? I don't think so.
I also don't think it's a bring Eric Carlson in to win the Stanley Cup this year move. He's going to be good for 5 or 6 years.
He's only under contract for 2.
Well, I mean, we just talked about how attractive it is to live here, how cheap it is, the cost of living. You can get a mansion for a third of the price of some cities. You have no state tax, which is obviously a huge deal when you're talking about millions of dollars. Why wouldn't he stay?
Well, I'd take it a step further and say, you know what? Why bother getting him now? Let's wait 2 years and we'll get him in free agency. This is going to be a destination. We're going to be able to attract free agents out the wazoo
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the, you know, choices. So let's give this team, as is, a chance to flourish for a couple of years. Then we see the development of the Brännströms and the Cody Glasses and the Nick Suzukis and whatnot. And then from there, then you add the ultimate pieces to put us over the top. Maybe add Carlson in 2 years from now to a team that's already looking like it goes into the season as a cup contender.
Yeah, and I like that point for obviously a lot of reasons, mainly because you're agreeing with me. But secondarily, like, why I really like that is if you ask any of the players in the room why it works, they will say, and they've said it from day one, we all came here. There were no cliques. Nobody was already friends with somebody else or had to do this or that. We all had to do everything as a team and learn to be one right from the beginning, because if we didn't, we weren't going to be very good. And so this team is really that close. And I feel like it's not just Erik Karlsson. I mean, you could talk about trading for Sidney Crosby. You could talk about trading for Connor McDavid. I feel like if somebody from the room has to leave in order for somebody to come in, it's just not going to work because of the camaraderie and how this team was built and put together from day one.
McDavid coming here, not going to work.
You bring in Karlsson, right?
I'm making a point.
30 minutes of ice time.
Yeah,
right?
Well, exactly.
So who's going to lose all that ice time? Right now, all the defensemen are playing, you know, upwards of maybe 20 minutes tops, whereas now you bring in Karlsson, it changes the dynamic of the entire defense.
If I have to sacrifice John Merrill's ice time for Erik Karlsson, I'm 100% fine with that. No, I see you guys' side, and I'm not saying it's a slam dunk. Absolutely, you should trade for Karlsson. I mean, I think it's a balance, like because what you guys are saying does have merit to it, and it's that's why George McPhee gets paid the big bucks to make those types of decisions. But I think just the fact that there's a conversation of should they bring him in, based off of a month ago, 2 months ago, we were saying James Neal, Fleury, Marchessault, they're all getting traded.
Right.
It's just wild how the perspective has changed.
And now you look at Jonathan Marchessault, you say, there's no way you trade this guy. You got to lock him up. Like Braden McNabb, great. I'm happy for you. Four years, $10 million, fantastic. Hey, George, sign Marchessault.
Yeah, and I actually, when I spoke with McPhee last week, I tried to ask him about the upcoming UFAs and whether you want to get them locked up. Obviously, I mean, at this point, every game that Marchessault plays, he's going to be more expensive.
Right.
So you'd got to think you want to lock him up as soon as possible. He wouldn't tell me because that's the smart answer is to not tell me.
I wouldn't tell you anything.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him for not telling me. But yeah, I mean, if you're McPhee, you got to get this done as soon as possible because he's only going to get more expensive.
No, absolutely. But that's the other side of why all this stuff works, because you've got Jonathan Marchessault, who is having a career year again, who is a point-a-game player right now, and he's saying to himself, well, man, what else do I have to do to get signed? Like, what else do I have to do? I'm going to keep going out there and play my game and get better. And that's this entire team. Like, George McPhee is in this situation. You mentioned it earlier, Jesse, with the contracts and the fact that there aren't any bad contracts. And really, outside of a few guys, there aren't any, none of these players are locked up long term outside of maybe Riley Smith and Braden McNabb. So George McPhee is getting this extended period to look at this team and say, that's a core piece, that's a core piece, that's a core piece. I thought he was a core piece, but maybe he's not. And that's the beauty of all of this. And every single time that George McPhee doesn't sign a player after a great game or after a great stretch, that guy's sitting in his locker room stall saying, man, I want to play here. What else do I have to do?
Well, let's look at that for a second, though, because so one of the things we talked about is how great it is for him to have the flexibility of not being stuck to any long contracts. Having said that, it complicates immensely, exponentially, how do you put this team together next year? So you don't just go start throwing out contracts to this guy, and be like, oh, boy, now what do we got left? Now we're going to lose key pieces. So I think it makes sense for him at this point to sort of play the wait-and-see approach, as you said, to see which of these members of this team are going to be the core going forward, because you don't have a core next year. Like, there's not enough players signed next year to say, okay, this is going to be the team. So right now, you have to be wary and careful of any long-term deals that you throw out that are, you know, big-money deals, because it could have a negative effect on it, on the overall team. Like, we see what happened, obviously, in Edmonton with Draisaitl and McDavid, and them not really being prepared for that.
Yeah, I completely agree, but I do think there are exceptions. Like, Jonathan Marchessault is a stud. Like,
yeah.
I think last year he scored 30 goals for the Panthers, and they were like, eh, may have been a fluke. They were wrong. He's showing now, this guy is, and he's 26. And the thing is, like, you're not going to sign him to a mega deal like Draisaitl or McDavid just got. So I think him and then maybe Karlsson, you've got another year to wait. So you don't have to do it right now. But I think Marchessault is like the one exception to that rule that they need to get him locked up. Like other guys, though, I completely agree. And it's such a luxury, and you can easily ruin that by making a couple bad contracts.
No, absolutely. But when you look at Marchessault and you look at what he does and how well he fits on that top line with Riley Smith, who is locked up longer term, and William Karlsson, who's going to be here next year, you say to yourself, there's no one out there that's going to be better in that position. And so for Jonathan Marchessault, you give him a 4 or 5 year contract, I'm sure he's going to be all about it. He wants to stay here. He wants stability for his family. And what guy wouldn't want that, bouncing around from organization, not really given a chance until last year under Coach Gerard Gallant, and now again this year under Coach Gerard Gallant? I think Jonathan Marchessault, to me, is the next domino to fall, without question.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with Marchessault specifically. Just bringing up the point that, you know, this is a complicated puzzle, and you want to put the pieces in place. But, you know, it does get more simplified when you start to put a few pieces into place. So signing Marchessault now helps to, you know, identify, you know, he helps to clarify, like, what do you have left for next year? What is your cap situation, and what can you afford for the rest of the core?
Absolutely. So, Daniel, can't bring you on here without talking a little bit of poker. How have you been able to fit poker into your life with all these Golden Knights games and coming on podcasts and on the radio and all that? How have you been able to do it?
Well, it's funny you say that because, you know, since the Knights have been, you know, doing so well at home specifically, like, I've canceled so many road trips because I just don't like missing games. I've been unfortunate to have to miss 3 games so far, and I hated missing the Pittsburgh game. It's one I really wanted to see. But I've basically been in study mode for the most part with poker because poker is something that, you know, throughout every couple of years, much like hockey or anything else, there's an evolution in terms of playing style and, you know, innovation and technology that's available to you. So I spent the last couple of months really working hard and studying. And the first event I played after doing that was at the Bellagio just a few weeks ago, and I won $1 million. So I was very happy and proud of that because it was the toughest tournament I've ever faced against all the young geniuses. But I will be going to Bahamas in January, missing another 2 games, Rangers and Edmonton.
That sounds rough.
Yeah, that's and tough. Then I've already told them, I'm supposed to go to Monte Carlo in late April, May, and I've already told people that this isn't happening because I'm not leaving when the Knights are in the playoffs.
Absolutely. And I was looking at that, and you said, like you said, you kind of put your nose to the grindstone before that tournament, and I was impressed. A guy like you that's a veteran, you've been doing this for so long, you're one of, if not the most accomplished guys out there. A lot of guys will kind of rest on their laurels and just show up for big tournaments, but you've kind of hunkered down and tried to get back into this, like you said, reinvented the way you play, kind of. How has that process been, and how much better do you think you are now?
Well, I think in order to be successful over a long period of time, it requires the humility to be objective about where you stand against some of your opponents. And I look at a lot of these young guys who are hungry, and they're spending 12 to 16 hours using software and practicing, and I'd be foolish to think that, you know, that just because I was good 10 years ago, you know, I'm still good enough to beat that. So I thought it was important for me, if I was going to try to be competitive at the highest levels, to put in the work. So I've been working with a couple guys who are much more in tune with, you know, some computer technology that I can use to improve on my game. And it's really, really been beneficial and fun, really, because, you know, I've been playing poker 20 years, and there's been points where it's kind of boring because I'm, you know, well, frankly, because most of the people I played with sucked. And now, you know, a lot of these young guys, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Especially the young German crew. They've worked really hard in their game, and they're essentially the top of the game right now. So it's been fun to try to figure out what they're doing and see how my game at its best can stack up against those guys.
Well, Daniel, we really, really appreciate you carving out an hour to spend it with us. Anytime you want to come back on, we will gladly have you. It's been a blast, bud.
Nothing more fun for me than talking hockey, and it's a pleasure to, you know, have the opportunity to talk to you guys, because, you know, I listen to a lot of different podcasts, and I really believe that, you know, when it comes to Vegas Golden Knights, you guys do the absolute best job of, you know, informing the people about what's going on with the team and, of course, the rest of the league.
Well, we really appreciate that, Daniel. Where can people find you on Twitter, the internet, all that stuff?
Well, on Twitter, it's real. I mean, that's where I'm mostly at, is Real Kid Poker, and I've also got a Facebook page that has, you know, stuff, but mainly you'll find everything at Real Kid Poker.
You're tweeting out like hand by hand. Like, yeah. I was impressed with how in depth you were getting with live tweeting your poker tournament.
Well, normally they have, you know, people covering the event, and they weren't. So I figured, you know what, I'll play it, win it, and cover it myself.
There you go.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. That's fantastic. All right, Daniel. Also, by the way, Daniel's got a sandwich named after him. It's mighty tasty. So I always like talking to people that have sandwiches named after them.
That's true. At Vegination.
Yep.
It's called the Daniel Legrano Meatball Grinder, and it's totally vegan, just for the record.
It's fantastic. Everyone should go out and try it. So, again, Daniel, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it. If you haven't already, find us on iTunes, subscribe, make sure that you give us a 5-star rating if you think that we're awesome. Even if you don't think we're awesome and you just hate Jesse Granger, go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating. Hashtag suck at Granger. We will appreciate that as well. Jesse, where can people find you?
Other than hashtag suck at Granger, you can find me at Twitter, at Jesse Granger _.
And you can find me at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. That's mainly where I am. And I believe we got a request for a Suck It Granger t-shirt.
Jesus.
We're doing it.
Transformed into what I don't know.
No, it's the greatest thing.
Yeah, it's the greatest.
All right. Again, thank you so much to Daniel Negreanu for taking the time, spending it with us today. We will be back next week with another episode of Rink Rats. Until then, see ya.